This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Congressional Democrats are proposing a far-reaching overhaul of America's police procedures and accountability. It is a sweeping legislative response to the mass protests denouncing the deaths of Black Americans in the hands of law enforcement. However, the political outlook is deeply uncertain in this polarized election year. The Justice and Policing Act would overhaul legal protection for police, create a national database of excessive force incidents, and set new standards for police training. U.S. President Donald Trump is conflating it with outside efforts to abolish the police and says the Democrats have gone crazy. At the Capitol, Democrats read the names of George Floyd and others who died in police hands and then knelt for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, the time former police officer Derek Chauvin is seen holding his knee on George Floyd's neck before Floyd dies. Bail for Chauvin has been set at $1 million. He said little during an 11-minute hearing Monday in which he appeared on closed-circuit television from Minnesota's maximum security prison. His attorney, Eric Nelson, did not contest the bail amount, nor did he address the substance of the charges in court. Nelson did not speak with reporters afterward and has not commented publicly on the case since the former officer was arrested last month. Chauvin's next appearance is set for June 29th. More than 406,000 people have now died from the deadly COVID-19 virus globally. That figure is roughly 111,000 in the United States. The number of confirmed infections worldwide is nearly 7.1 million, and there are more than 1.9 million confirmed infections in the United States alone, and Brazil falls behind the United States in a number of cases. This is VOA News. A group of economists declared that as of February, the U.S. economy entered a recession. It means an end to more than a decade of steady, if slow, growth. The economists said employment peaked in February and fell sharply afterward, marking the beginning of the downturn. A committee within the National Bureau of Economic Research, a trade group, determines when recessions begin and end. It defines a recession as a decline in economic activity that lasts more than a few months. The committee acknowledged, however, that in this case, the depth of the economic downturn so far also played a role in its decision. Venezuela's government said on Monday that a flight carrying humanitarian aid for the COVID-19 epidemic has arrived from Iran, which has become a crucial ally to the South American nation and U.S. sanctions. Washington has created a broad sanctions program against the government of President Nicolas Maduro in efforts to force him from power. That has led Maduro to expand an alliance with Iran, which recently supplied gasoline to Venezuela. Health experts say Venezuela is at high risk in the epidemic due to a broad economic collapse that has severely weakened public hospitals and undermined public services, including electricity and water. The South American nation's oil industry, which for years provided fuel nearly for free, is now barely producing any gasoline at all and has struggled to import because sanctions have left most companies unwilling to provide it. Iran recently sent tankers of gasoline against the wishes of the United States, helping ease chronic fuel shortages. Days of back and forth between the Koreas has led to the North saying it is severing hotlines with the South as the first step towards shutting down all contact with Seoul. That's according to North Korean state news agency KCNA. The North continues to threaten to close an inter-Korean liaison office and other projects if the South does not stop defectors from sending leaflets and other material into the North. North Korea has already stopped answering routine daily calls between the two militaries. A report accuses South Korean authorities of irresponsibly allowing defectors to hurt the dignity of North Korea's supreme leadership. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam now says a Chinese-ruled city cannot afford to tolerate any more of the chaos that has roiled in the last 12 months, with anti-government protests plunging the city into turmoil. Lam was speaking at her weekly press briefing, which coincided with the first anniversary of a mass rally against a now-withdrawn bill that would have allowed people to be extradited to mainland China for trial in courts controlled by the Communist Party. The demonstration is largely viewed as the start of the anti-government protest movement that revived in recent weeks amid fears over Beijing's tightening grip over the city. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 9th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's judiciary accuses President Kenyatta of failing to appoint judges.
The Constitution does not donate any mandate to the president to perform any other act upon receipt of the names recommended by the chairs, except to appoint them.
More and more Kenyan health workers are testing positive for COVID-19. Tanzanian President Magufuli is criticized for ending coronavirus measures too soon. The indigenous people of Biafra is accused of a misinformation campaign against the Buhari government. And Ugandan parliamentarian Bobi Wine sympathizes with the family of George Floyd.
Bobi Wine expressed sympathies towards the family of George Floyd and the entire black community, especially in the U.S. He emphasized that being black does not make one less human. Being black is just a state of one's skin color.
Joe Senyanyi is spokesperson for Ugandan parliamentarian Bobi Wine's People Power Movement. And the corruption trial is open in Paris for former World Athletics chief Lamine Diaw. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's Chief Justice has accused President Uhuru Kenyatta of disregarding court orders, failing to approve the appointment of new judges, and threatening the Constitution. Some political experts say the judiciary is fighting to keep the independence it has enjoyed in the past 10 years. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Speaking to reporters on Monday, Chief Justice David Maraga called on the president to appoint some judges forwarded by the Judicial Service Commission.
The Constitution does not donate any mandate to the president to perform any other act upon receipt of the names recommended by the chairs, except to appoint them.
The names of the 41 judges were forwarded to President Uhuru Kenyatta for appointment in mid-2019. Through the Attorney General, Kenyatta questioned the integrity of some judges, but twice the court ruled in their favor. Maraga said the delay in approving and swearing in the jurists has made the work difficult for the courts.
If you file a land case in the Environment and Land Court at Milimani, Nairobi, today, the earliest your case will be heard is in 2022. This is because we have a total of 31 ELC judges in the country against a case backlog of 16,457 as at 31st of March this year. The situation is probably worse at the Court of Appeal, which has only 15 judges serving the whole Republic.
When contacted, the president's office said it did not wish to comment on the judiciary's accusations. Bob Mukangi is one of the authors of the 2010 Constitution.
The executive endeavoring to claw back some of the powers that were taken away by the 2010 Constitution, and especially the role that the president played back then in cutting, hiring, and with the ability to fire judges, in as much as some points their tenure of service had been put back in the Constitution.
Having an independent judiciary in place was one of the ways to end Kenya's cycle of political violence, according to some analysts. Joy Mdivo is a political commentator.
Right now, the judiciary reads mischief in the entire proceedings because you will notice that there's already a Supreme Court judge who has retired from service. There are two other judges who are coming up for retirement, as well as the Chief Justice himself. This is significant because the Supreme Court is the one that determines if there's a dispute in presidential elections. And so repopulating the Supreme Court is critical, not just for the justice system, but clearly is critical in the political arena.
In the 2017 presidential election, the Supreme Court, led by David Maraga, nullified the vote for failing to meet the threshold of a credible election, a decision that has angered the ruling Jubilee Party. Kenyatta won a new term in a rerun of the election. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
At least 81 health workers in Kenya have tested positive for COVID-19 since the first case of the virus was recorded in the country. According to the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union, 61% of the infections are work-related. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, 3 of the 95 positive cases recorded yesterday, Monday, were healthcare workers.
The healthcare workers in Kenya have been complaining for a while in regard to their safety at work. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union Secretary General Chibanzi Mwachonda said that most counties in Kenya are not prepared to handle the increased number of COVID-19 cases and that the current number of healthcare workers may be overwhelmed.
Our counties are not yet prepared to handle a surge in cases. We anticipate that in the next few days we shall actually hit the 200 mark, going by how the figures have been going. So that means that for this month, we are likely to see an exponential increase in cases. We actually welcome even the decision to hold a summit between the two levels of government to ensure that the directive to set up 300-bed isolation facilities in each county is achieved.
According to the union, 61% of healthcare workers got infected while in line of duty. Dr. Mwachonda said the government must employ more healthcare workers as well as ensuring their safety at work.
We equally as KMPDU state that the infrastructure setup is important, but more important is the human resource function and the human resources required to run these facilities. If these facilities are set up in our current scenario, where the healthcare workers are in their current numbers, they are not yet enough, then we will still not be able to achieve the desired outcome.
Chief Administrative Secretary, Ministry of Health, Rashid Amani, said that as numbers go high, the frontline healthcare workers may also continue contracting the virus.
Today, we have recorded 95 positive cases in the past 24 hours. I want to commend our healthcare workers of all cadres who are doing a great job under very difficult circumstances. Today, we have mentioned that there are three healthcare workers who have tested positive in Nyeri. Again, this tells you that our healthcare workers who are in the front line are also at risk, and from time to time, we will see some of these health workers turning positive.
The total number of COVID-19 cases in Kenya now stands at 2,862 as the death toll rises to 85. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A former president of the Tanganyika Law Society is expressing concern that Tanzania could soon see a spike in COVID-19 cases. Attorney Fatma Karume, who is also a human rights activist, says President Magufuli's decision to declare the East African country free from the coronavirus is dangerous. Her remarks come after the president declared Tanzania coronavirus-free at a church service in the capital, Dodoma, on Sunday. President Magufuli told the congregation that God has answered the prayers of the people by eliminating the coronavirus disease. Attorney Karume tells viewers Peter Clotty that the president's declaration is disappointing.
Peter, my opinion on the matter is very simple. In Tanzania, whatever the president says goes. He is a man who you should not cross, you should not query, you should not question. And therefore, if the president of the United Republic of Tanzania has decided and has determined that there is no more COVID-19 in Tanzania, he is right and he is correct. And I dare not question him.
So Fatma, how are the people of Tanzania reacting to this message from President Magufuli? Because I understand that some health experts are expressing concern that if care is not taken and properly addressed, they are surely going to see a spike in the infection rate in Tanzania. What are your views?
I think one must distinguish between health professionals and the general public. Amongst health professionals, of course, there are concerns. They're very aware that COVID-19, frankly, doesn't give two hoots about an imperial presidency. It doesn't even understand our system. It lives in a world of its own, and that world is of infecting and survival through infection. Now, this is distinct from people who are living within this imperial presidency. These people, when they hear the words of the president, they believe the president, and therefore they truly believe that the COVID-19 epidemic is over so far as Tanzania is concerned, and they need not take any more preventive or protective measures against it.
Fatma, where does this leave the ordinary Tanzanian who does not have confidence in the healthcare system because of skepticism President Magufuli has expressed in the system, the closure of the border by Kenya because of the measures, restrictions imposed to stop the spread or limit the spread of the coronavirus in Kenya? Where does this leave the people of Tanzania?
This leaves the people of Tanzania, as is commonplace in Tanzania, to our own resources. You either believe what the president says and take off your mask and not take care because COVID-19 is over and risk infection. And even if you do get infected, you're effectively left to your own resources, because we've been told that if you get infected, there's no point in going into hospital. Just use steam and local medication. So that's one set of people. The other set of people are those who don't believe a word he says, and they will continue to wear masks and they will continue to keep washing their hands and taking preventive measures.
Fatma Karume is the former president of the Tanganyika Law Society. She was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 9th. Ugandan Member of Parliament Robert Chakulayi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, addressed the media on Monday in Kampala about a number of issues from the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, his desire to contest the 2021 presidential race, to expressing solidarity with the global protests over the police killing of George Floyd. Joe Sanyonyi, spokesperson for the People Power Movement, says Bobi Wine was simply responding to President Yoweri Museveni's address to the nation last week about the government's latest measures to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
Bobi Wine was saying, look, this is the real state in which our nation, Uganda, is, and that's what the focus should be on. And he raised a couple of things. He talked about healthcare, for example. Our country's healthcare is in an ailing state. And that's why for the longest time, our country's leaders have always not gone to our hospitals here locally. No, whenever they're unwell, they get onto the plane, go to Germany, go to the US, to South Africa, wherever else there's good healthcare, at the expense of the taxpayers. Our education system is in a shambolic state. You know, we have quantity education as opposed to quality education. You find that a child in grade 7 cannot do work of grade 2. And a plethora of other things. Our economy, which is shattered in many respects.
He wants to be the next president of Uganda. Did he address anything about the 2021 election?
There's been some rumors, some propaganda that has been spread by our detractors, you know, saying that Bobi Wine is not going to stand for president in 2021. He's going to run again for his parliamentary seat. And so Bobi Wine made the clarification that he told the nation that he's going to challenge Mr. Museveni in the next general election, and he has not changed his mind about that.
I think it was just about a week ago that the Honorable Bobi Wine addressed what he called infighting within his People Power Movement. How prevalent is this infighting?
Well, sometimes there can be misunderstandings within people in the same home, in the same family, and so that can happen. So he was saying, guys, you know, let's deal with the challenges at hand so that we keep majoring on majors and minoring on minors. The same way the head of the household, you know, when children are having a conflict or that kind of thing, he comes in or she comes in and says, look, you know, let's deal with this situation such that we keep together as brothers and sisters. And so that's what he was doing. But I must say quickly that the state plants people to say they are People Power, to wear our, you know, branded items, our paraphernalia, to try and wreak havoc, to try and cause a stir and cause conflict. So we are very alive to this fact. And so that's the other message that he was sending out there.
The death of George Floyd in Minneapolis has sparked protests, not only here in the United States, but globally. What did the Honorable Bobi Wine have to say about the U.S. protests?
Bobi Wine, for starters, expressed sympathies towards the family of George Floyd and the entire black community, especially in the U.S., where many times they are ill-treated just because they are black. And so he emphasized that Being black does not make one less human. Being black is just a state of one's skin color. And so he was expressing solidarity with the people in the U.S., both black and white, by the way, who have come out to say Black Lives Matter, who have come out to say it is wrong for anybody to be ill-treated because of their skin color. So he stands in solidarity with them. And in the same vein, he was saying, look, there's hostility that is happening in Uganda, for example, where members of the opposition are ill-treated simply because they are opposed to the regime that is in power. And so Bobi Wine was saying, little wonder many African countries and their leaders have not come out to express solidarity with the black community in the US and elsewhere. Why? Because they themselves are perpetrators of violence.
Joe Senyonyi is the spokesperson for Bobi Wine's People Power Movement. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. Former World Athletics Chief Lamine Diop was back in a Paris courtroom on Monday as the corruption trial opened against him. As Lisa Bryan reports from Paris, the case involved a Russian doping scandal.
87-year-old Lamine Diop seemed relaxed as he made his court appearance Monday, sporting a dark gray suit. Arguments in the case were originally due to start in January, but postponed when new documents containing testimony from his son and co-defendant were submitted to the court. Lamine Diop is the former head of World Athletics, which was once known as the IAAF. As head of the IAAF from 1999 to 2015, Diop was once one of the most powerful figures in world athletics. Today, he lives under house arrest in Paris, charged with corruption and money laundering. Prosecutors allege Diop solicited millions of dollars to cover up Russian doping tests. Some of the money allegedly went to finance Macky Sall's 2012 presidential campaign in Senegal. Sall won the election. If found guilty, Diop faces up to 10 years in prison. Diop denies wrongdoing. The trial is being held in Paris as the alleged money laundering happened on French soil. One of Diop's lawyers, Simon Diop, told reporters that people were unfairly lashing out against his client without any precise elements to back up their accusations. Diop said Diop's accusers have forgotten others surrounded the ex-chief. His client's only concern, Diop said, was to defend the IAAF and preserve its financial resources. One of Diop's sons, Papa Massata Diop, also faces corruption, among other charges. He remains in Senegal, which has refused to extradite him, and will be tried in absentia. Four others are also on trial. Briton Sebastian Coe replaced Diop as the association's head. He's trying to rebuild trust in athletics and has introduced changes on how the sport is governed. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A spokesperson for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is calling on the international community to disregard what he calls a misinformation campaign to create a wedge between Abuja and its partners around the world. Galba Shehu says the indigenous people of Biafra, IPOB, a separatist group described by the government as a terrorist organization, is behind the campaign. In a statement, the presidential spokesperson says an inquiry by the government with international partners found that leaders of IPOB are using the cover of Christianity and calling for a U.S. special envoy to be appointed to stop the genocide of Christians in Nigeria. Spokesperson Garba Shehu tells viewers Peter Clotty that the Buhari administration has launched a diplomatic effort to defeat IPOB's campaign.
Well, you know, this is a group that at its leadership professes to Judaism. They say they are Jews. Curiously, they have presented themselves as advocates of Christianity, and they have launched a campaign against the Nigerian state, alleging genocide of Christians. Now, we are worried because it seems to be a well-funded campaign. From October last year, they have been spending $85,000 every month on some lobbyists and the PR agents. And the purpose of this campaign is to drive a wedge between the Nigerian government and its friends in Europe, UK, and the United States of America. Their purpose of doing this is to project the false allegation that Christians are being persecuted in Nigeria, and that the only way to save Christianity in Nigeria is by supporting the creation of Biafran state. Biafra had been fought for in a civil war in Nigeria and had been resolved at the end of the war, and Nigeria has continued as one entity. This is a splinter group that wants to recreate. They had tried that Biafra, they had tried the violent means. The Nigerian government proscribed their group, and they branded the course of land of our country, declared them as a terrorist group.
Let me ask you this question. There have been instances where the site, the group site, including other NGOs, that it appears that Christians are being persecuted, some are being killed, and the government has yet to respond forcefully or protect them. Do you think their criticism is justified?
Well, let me say that Nigerian Christian lives, as well as Muslim lives, had been taken, had been unfairly, unjustly taken by terrorists who have no religion that you can say is their own, because they don't spare any Muslims, they don't spare Christians. There is also criminality involving herders and the farmers. Much of it has now been resolved. The herders and the farmers, they belong to different religions. They could be Muslims, Christians, and they have killed. There is also the problem of banditry and the cattle rustling, which is now being confronted head on. Again, criminality in Nigeria, as is the case in all parts of the world, does not make a distinction between religions and ethnicity. So there are victims, there have been victims who have been Christians, there have equally been victims who are not Christians.
So let me ask you, do you think the campaign that IPOB, a terrorist group or a secessionist group, as the government have described it, has been successful so far in driving this wedge or lodging this campaign against the government?
They are trying to be successful, and it should worry patriotic Nigerians who don't want a war between Christians and Muslims in their country to hear a few congressmen and parliamentarians in Europe and America use speaking in the language of the IPOB. They are adopting, some of them have adopted the language. I think this is sufficient reason to feel concerned.
Gal Bashir, who is the spokesperson for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, you are speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from Abuja. And that's it for this Tuesday, June 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a good day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.